coming up on this week's mini episode of the Broken Brain Podcast.
And one of the craziest things in that is that we're seeing now with conditions like dementia and Alzheimer's is looking like it's not only are we referencing like type 3 diabetes, but it's very strongly looking like it's an inability of the brain to detoxify itself. And so what are we seeing?
Waste and plaque and all sorts of things.
What are we seeing? This epidemic of sleep deprivation.
Hi, everyone. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by my new venture and our newest protein powder, the Pegan Shake. One of the best ways to boost your brain power is with the best nutrition. This is why Dr. Mark Hyman and I teamed up to create the perfect shake to start your morning off right and set your brain and body up for vitality and success. The shake is called the Pegan Shake, and it features a combination of grass-fed collagen, organic pumpkin, and organic pea protein powder with healthy fats from MCT oil and avocado oil, which, by the way, are great for fat burning and fueling brain power as well. A little bonus, the Pegan Shake also features organic acacia fiber, which is great for gut motility and digestion. See, this shake was created to support healthy blood sugar and healthy energy levels. In fact, one of the most common reasons for mood imbalances and brain challenges come from unbalanced blood sugar. Have you ever felt anxious, tired, and wired, and then ate something and felt better? Well, when your blood sugar goes through major fluctuations throughout the day, you literally can feel crazy. I know so many people can relate. So the Pegan Shake supports your blood sugar by feeding your body the right information from this perfect combination of macronutrients. I've been using the Pegan Shake for months, and I feel full, satisfied, satiated, focused, and most importantly, I avoid those energy slumps that come in the late afternoon too. I think you're gonna love this shake. Dr. Hyman and I teamed up to make it because we literally couldn't find a shake mix that we loved. So we decided to create it ourselves. Check it out at getpharmacy.com/pegan shake. You can find the link in the show notes. That's getpharmacy, pharmacy with an F, pharmacy.com/pegan shake. Now on to today's episode. Hey everyone, Drew Perrode here, host of the Broken Brain Podcast. We all know the importance of getting enough sleep, though many of us, here's the truth, many of us scrape by with as little as possible. It turns out that sleep can make or break your ability to lose weight, age slower, prevent cancer, and even perform at a high level. When your sleep suffers, you suffer major consequences far beyond the dark circles under your eyes. My guest on today's mini episode, Sean Stevenson and Dr. Carlos Ritter, talk to us about how sleep is the foundation of health and how it impacts your body and your brain function, your performance, and so much more. They discuss how to create the ideal sleep sanctuary, how to regulate your circadian rhythm, and the most important sleep nutrients. They also talk about how EMFs, electromagnetic frequencies from Wi-Fi and cell phone, interfere with sleep pathways and what we can do about it. Let's listen in, starting with my interview with my good friend Sean Stevenson, author of the international best-selling book Sleep Smarter and creator of the Model Health Show, featured as one of the top podcasts on iTunes.
The number one thing driving our brain is our sleep quality, which we'll talk about today. Just hopefully people have their socks knocked off. And so what is sleep really? Well, all we can do is just look at what's happening in the brain when we're sleeping. That's how we know we're sleeping, is a change in your brain waves. And so right now we're in a normal waking state, which is beta. We can get into some gamma, but as we start to transition to sleep, we get more into alpha and the brain waves start to slow down. Then we go to theta. And then from there, we go to deep delta sleep, slow wave, non-REM delta sleep. And this is the most anabolic stage that the human body can be in. Just being up is catabolic. Even if you're sitting doing nothing, your body is in this kind of catabolic state. It's breaking down faster. It's like you're plugging into this infinite energy source when you're sleeping and getting that deep delta sleep. Because this is when you're producing the vast majority of your human growth hormone. You produce 70% of your human growth hormone during sleep. Kids have so much of it. This is why they have so much energy. But for us, it's right around 18 to 20, there's a pretty sharp decline in HGH production. And my argument is it's a cultural thing too, because around 18 to 20, you don't have rules. Like, you know, you're out of the house and you don't abide by a schedule. And so I know for me, when I went to college, like, I didn't think about it ever. about getting, you know, whatever amount of sleep. And so what we want to do is, and there, and we've actually, we can look at the research now, people who are getting 6 hours of high quality sleep, crushing it with their blood sugar levels, memory test performance, folks who might be getting 8 hours of crappy sleep, right? So it's not just the quantity does matter, but the quality matters a lot. And what it really boils down to is getting efficient sleep cycles, spending the appropriate amount of time in each cycle for you, which is going to be a little bit different for everybody. And sleep cycles on average are about 75 minutes to maybe 115 minutes, but we'll just say 90 for average. So 90 minute sleep cycles. I recommend that you do get 4 a night. So that for the average person, that would be around 6 at minimum. And from there, but you might need an extra sleep cycle complete. So that would be like 7.5. Some folks, it's 9 hours. LeBron James, he 9 hours. Like he's part of his training, you know, and I quoted him in the book as well. And Usain Bolt, fastest human ever. He said this, that sleep is a part of his training because it enables his body to absorb the training better. And those were his words. And so that's what it really boils down to. And there are certain things, and we'll talk about some of them today, that throw your sleep cycles totally out of balance. And you might think you're getting 8 hours of sleep, but objectively, if we use a sleep monitor, you can be missing several hours of sleep by making some of these mistakes.
I love it. And going back to the brain waves and everything you were sharing, I mean, we now know that your brain is going into a deep DNA repair mode at night when it's sleeping. It's got its little trash can cells, trash dump truck cells that are going in and offloading. And I mean, you probably know the science on it way better than I do. We talked about a bunch about it in Broken Brain, but there's so many factors that are happening while we sleep, especially inside the brain.
Oh, listen to this. And this might freak you out a little bit, but your brain shrinks while you're sleeping. And it can shrink, you know, it can shrink about 30%. And it's because
physically in size,
like literally in size. Yes. Really? Yes. And this is because when you're awake, there are a lot. I mean, your brain is doing just
so many things.
Yeah. We're talking like millions and millions of processes every microsecond. And there's a lot of metabolic waste that occur from that. And that's all good. But we have to get those things out. Your brain has to flush that stuff out. And it's kind of hanging on to a lot of it until it can go into rest mode and do its deep cleaning. And it wouldn't be like that if our lymphatic system was connected, like, but we have the blood-brain barrier. And so they don't directly like link up because, you know, it's kind of this extracellular fluid throughout our bodies. But your brain has its own kind of lymphatic system, right? This extracellular waste management system called the glymphatic system, which is a little shout out to the glial cells that run it.
Glial cells, yeah.
And the crazy thing about it is that when you're sleeping, it's upwards of 10 times more active than when you're awake, this glymphatic system. So I'm talking, it is going into hyperactivity to clean your brain and to get rid of these metabolic waste products while you're sleeping. And one of the craziest things that we're seeing now with conditions like dementia and Alzheimer's is looking like it's not only are we referencing like type 3 diabetes, but it's very strongly looking like it's an inability of the brain to detoxify itself. And so what are we seeing?
Waste and plaque and all sorts of things.
What are we seeing? This epidemic of sleep deprivation.
Mm. Let's talk about, we've set the problem up, right? What can happen to your health when you don't get good sleep? We talked about why sleep is important. What are the things that typically throw people off when the conversation comes to, hey, how'd you sleep last night? It's primarily focused on what you were saying earlier, which is quantity over quality. Take us through some of the things that impact the quality of our sleep.
Absolutely.
And can throw it off or on.
Absolutely. You know, let's talk about, since I've got this little kombucha here.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this because, you know, and kombucha, shout out to kombucha. It's wonderful. I hope I didn't do a product placement, but, you know, send a check to the show, Broken Brain. But, you know, it's made with black tea, right? So it's caffeinated. There's some caffeine in here. And depending on your metabolism for caffeine, wow, like, I'll just share one study with you. So what they did was they took test subjects and they gave them caffeine directly before they go to sleep, 3 hours before they go to sleep, and even 6 hours before they go to sleep. And they found that even 6 hours out was enough to dramatically suppress their sleep quality. So what happened was, subjectively, the test subjects thought that, say, they got 8 hours of sleep. Objectively, by having caffeine even 6 hours before bed, they lost 1 hour of their sleep. Wow. So they were unconscious, so you don't know it, but it's because they're not going through their sleep cycles effectively. And immediately, so first of all, it's just like, wow, that's kind of crazy, but I'm asking why, what's going on? Two things. Number one, we do know caffeine is a pretty powerful nervous system stimulant. And kombucha is on the lower end of the scale, by the way. But if you're sensitive, it could be a problem at night. But, you know, an average cup of coffee, you know, we'll just say 200 milligrams. Caffeine is a very powerful nervous system stimulant. And it has a half-life, on average, somewhere around 8 hours. So that means, if you, we'll say you get a grande, right? So it's like maybe 400. And so after 8 hours, since it has an 8 hour half-life, 200 milligrams are still active in your system. And that can really kind of keep your nervous system lit up, which controls your neurotransmitters, which are related to your sleep. And 8 hours after that, half of that is still active. So 100 milligrams and so on and so on. Some people have a better metabolism for caffeine. Most of us are somewhere in the middle. Some people can't really touch it at all, and they're doing it every day and don't know that this is the reason they need more caffeine. Is this messing their sleep up? So that's number one. Number two is the role of this, was considered like a throwaway, like a byproduct of metabolism. It's called adenosine, all right, adenosine. Now we know that it's pretty important, because as you're going through the day and you're building up these byproducts, this adenosine molecules, they fit into receptor sites that as they start to get filled up, it starts to nudge your body to go into sleep mode. It starts to nudge you to go to sleep. And caffeine has this really interesting ability, because its structure is so similar to adenosine, it fits into those adenosine receptor sites. And so even though your body's producing these metabolic wastes that should be fitting in to nudge you to go to sleep mode, they can't fit in there. And so caffeine basically tricks your body into not knowing how tired you are. So I hope that makes sense.
It makes absolute sense. And I think there's a lot of people that are out there that can relate. There's a lot of people who even feel that caffeine doesn't affect me. I know I never really grew up drinking coffee. I never drank coffee. And when I was at university, a little bit of green tea, that sort of stuff. And then when I finally started having coffee, I am a fast metabolizer of caffeine. I got my genetics done and I can see it on there. And I also just have always felt it. But I used to think, oh, I could have a little espresso at night. It doesn't bug me. And I don't drink coffee regularly, so I probably have a better tolerance in general. And the quality of my sleep, when I really started paying attention and tracking my sleep better, I realized the quality was off. I still may have slept and fell asleep pretty quickly, and maybe I still got 7-8 hours, but my quality would always be thrown off.
Yeah, and that's ultimately what we want to get people to. We don't need all of these fancy tracking things. Those can be great, but we want to start to pay more attention to the subtle things, like how do you feel? How do you look? How are you performing throughout the day? How is your brain working? Like paying attention to those things. And full disclosure, I just want to share this. I'm a fan of caffeine. And I just started drinking coffee, actually. Maybe it's getting close to 2 years ago. And like my whole life, I was just like, because I'm very big on not having disgusting things. And so I thought coffee
not
was super
disgusting
things. I know it sounds crazy, but I'm very driven by pleasure, you know, like we're pleasure creatures. And so with my experience with coffee, I was like, I was a little kid and I had some of my grandma's, I took a sip and I was like, I'll never have that again.
It's like a little kid having beer, maybe.
You know, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it's like Folgers, like it was like Folgers, you know? And so then I had some really good coffee and my wife kept raving about it. First of all, and it was organic, it is that, all the little good things. And so I tried it one day and I was like, oh my God.
This is good.
Like, and now I get it. Like, yeah. I really, it's coffee isn't just coffee, it's experience.
It's a thing,
you know? And so I'm a big fan, but it's just, so the question is, okay, so how do we modulate this? So we can enjoy our coffee and our caffeine or your tea without it damaging your sleep. And so the number one thing is very simply having a caffeine curfew, you know, giving yourself a cutoff time. If at all possible, if you feel that this is something that's bothering you, it could potentially be bothering you. And so for me, it's noon. Like I don't have caffeine after that. I've actually had it one time after that, like in all the, you know, these couple of years. And so that's number one. But sometimes you might find yourself in a situation, maybe you got work to do, you know, you're working, you know, a research paper or something like that. And so what do you do? And if you do have some caffeine a little bit later, here's a little hack. And I don't like to do this very often because I want you to just do the thing, but L-theanine, all right? L-theanine kind of counteracts the effects of caffeine. And I shared this study recently on my show, but so folks who were, and this is like doing, you know, cognitive tests, folks who were given caffeine performed, you know, better than not having caffeine, which we kind of know. But when they were given L-theanine with the caffeine, they performed even better. So it has a synergistic effect on giving you this kind of calm energy because it counterbalances. But also from my experience in folks who take it in the evening, just by itself, not along with the caffeine, but it helps them to go into that sleep mode a little bit easier. So it's a little hack if you ever find yourself in that situation, but just do, you know, do a little Dr. Google on it, L-theanine and caffeine, and it's pretty interesting stuff.
I think you mentioned something earlier is that sometimes you don't know what's affecting you. So if you've never gone 2 weeks not having coffee after noon, it's almost like it can be part of a sleep cleanse, right? It can be part of something you try because if you, until you try it, it's almost like how they use a medical elimination diet. Until you've gotten rid of gluten, dairy, sugar, all at the same time, in functional medicine, they put you on an elimination diet. You don't really know what your sensitivities are until you bring it back in. So I think getting off of coffee for not having caffeine afternoon, just for 2 weeks can be enough that people start to see if they have any insights.
Yeah. And one of the things we want to be aware of, you know, even if you draw back on the amount of caffeine you've been having it so long, especially coffee, you know, there's like this, you know, people know about the coffee and poop connection,
yeah,
right? So there can be some rebound like constipation. So make sure that you're getting hydrated, having some prebiotics and some resistant starch and things like that to help the digestion as well. Like I've dealt with this with a lot of different patients over the years. And so also, I usually don't pull people off. I have them switch it up because caffeine is not the same in everything. It is subtly different.
So like
different.
Some yerba mate or green tea, switching to that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's so many cool ways we can experience and get vibes and different nutrients from other things. And that's a good segue to the next issue that could be causing people problems.
Yeah, tell us, break it down.
And this has to do with nutrient deficiencies, you know, and it's something so simple. You could be doing all the sleep hygiene stuff correctly, you know, the caffeine and the dark environment and like getting to bed by a certain time. But if you're deficient in key nutrients, like, and I call them, I've got a list of them, they're good sleep nutrients. These are prerequisites for making sleep-related hormones and neurotransmitters that enable you to actually go through your sleep cycle. For example, we'll use Public Library of Science published a study looking at a simple vitamin C deficiency and found that test subjects who were deficient in vitamin C had more interrupted sleep. So they woke up more frequently during the night. And simply balancing out that deficiency enabled them to have more consistent sleep. So we want to be mindful of that and making sure we're getting these key nutrients in, but also the form of the nutrient too. Because even vitamin C, there's like, see, this is what, I wasn't taught this in school. You know, this was a miseducation of Sean Stevenson.
They told you vitamin C is vitamin C is vitamin C.
That's it. You know, even like Mendeleev's table of elements, like that's not how nature works. Like magnesium on that table is like ash. That's not even like live magnesium. How does it work when it's alive? And so now we know that just like the B vitamins, like there's many of them. There are also many forms of vitamin C. There are many forms of vitamin D, and the list goes on and on. We get that intelligence through food. It's very difficult to get it in a pill, in a supplement that are synthetic forms of those things.
Because our body can't absorb it properly.
Most of the time.
It's not used to it. It doesn't look familiar.
Yeah, because your genes have really evolved communicating with food stuff, you know? So vitamin C is one. Another one is magnesium is a huge one. Absolutely. Huge. This is probably the biggest one for most people because in our culture, in our society, it's the number one mineral deficiency. And I remember having a conversation with Mark Hyman and he was talking about is responsible for over 300 biochemical processes in the body. Now we know it's over 325 biochemical processes. We've discovered a few more. And so when you're deficient in magnesium, what that really means is that's 325 things your body can't do or can't do efficiently if you're deficient in it. So your body wants to do all this cool stuff for you, but it can't even do it if you have this one mineral deficiency and over 80% of the population is deficient in magnesium. All right. So one of the studies, and so they were actually looking at insomniacs and every one of them had a magnesium deficiency, simply balancing out and getting their magnesium levels up, enable them to have a more normal sleep, almost comparable as if they didn't have insomnia simply by balancing out that one deficiency. So the question is, how do we do this? Food first. Anything green is going to be a good source of magnesium. But that's probably not going to be enough because it's responsible for so much. That's why it gets zapped so quickly.
Especially if people have been deficient for years.
Yeah. And also just stress. Like we have a totally different stress. Magnesium operates, how to best put this, it's really more of like a calmative mineral and the channels that it's related to, like relaxation of the muscles, proper muscle function, pathways with sleep. And so these are things that are really stressed today. And so I a lot of people that, you know, clients that would come in, this was probably the one thing that I did recommend people do supplementally because again, it's really food first approach, but there are great supplements out there. There's magnesium citrate.
Natural Calm.
Yeah. And here's the thing too, man. Epsom salt, right? And it's storied to help people to sleep better, heal muscles faster. It's just a form of magnesium. It's magnesium salt. And so taking it internally, but here's the catch though, is it's difficult to take an oral magnesium supplement to get your levels up because it pulls water to your bowels. And so it can cause I call it clinically a disaster pants is what I call it.
Especially if it's a citrate versus the glycinate.
Yeah, glycinate, yeah. Glycinate. And so it just depends on the person and how they're going to respond. Some people could take a little bit more, and some people it might be helpful to get a little
especially
poop
if
action
off
going.
Coffee and they're moving over to green tea.
There you go.
You need a little bit of
little assistance.
Little assistance.
You know, little Steve Nash in there, you know? And so that's one thing is, but for me, I love topical magnesium, you know, sprayed on your skin. Some of them, the really good ones are like 99% absorbable. Your body can only use as much as it.
Is there a brand that you like?
Ease. Yeah. I've been using that for like 5 years. I literally travel with it. Just keep it with me all the time. I love this stuff.
Amazing.
So yeah, we can't even talk about the nutrient stuff without understanding that. Can your gut bugs even associate with these nutrients? Because that's where the real final frontier is. We're talking about human health and wellness. And of course, there's so much conversation. People who listen to shows like this are very much aware of the microbiome. But I've been in it. Like just really like talking to the top people and researching this subject matter. And man, if there's anything that's going to affect your sleep, it's your gut health. And I was surprised to find this out. And this is because many of the sleep-related hormones and neurotransmitters are made and stored in your gut. Mm-hmm. And if your microbiome is off, it can mess up the whole system. For example, everybody's heard of serotonin, you know, at this point and how important it is with your mood, it's related to happiness. We know now over 80% of your serotonin is made and stored in your gut, it's enterochromaffin cells. And here's how this relates to sleep. Serotonin is a precursor to making melatonin, all right? And so it's part of that process. And so if you're into chromaffin cells, and so it was Caltech researchers found that these bacteria in our gut communicate directly with cells that make this stuff. And so that's number one, but melatonin itself. And I just being here and being able to geek out, man, I got to share this.
Please.
Melatonin, I was taught in college that melatonin is made in the pineal gland. That's it. Next, you know, next page. We now know that there's 400 times more melatonin in your gut than in your brain. And you can actually have your pineal gland removed, which I'm not saying to do that. Don't just go do that. But it's called pinealectomy. But you can have it removed and the levels of melatonin still stay relatively the same in your gut. And so with that said, melatonin is not just related to sleep. We hear melatonin, that's what we think about. Melatonin is a major driver, if not the master controller of your circadian system, your biological clock, your body clock, that is as real as the time on your cell phone and on your watch. It is the most real thing in our universe. We are lined up with the diurnal patterns, nocturnal patterns of life itself. And what the thing about humans is we can manufacture time, like daytime, and we can manufacture nighttime.
Through lights, through technology.
Yeah, but your body is always looking to be on rhythm because melatonin, being that it's a master driver of your circadian clock, it's regulating and influencing all of your other hormones because they're all being produced based on the time of day it is. And so that's one part of it. It's also a very powerful anti-cancer hormone as well. And so one of the studies I cited in the book related, it was a huge, you know, nurses study. They found that the nurses who were working the night shift, you know, doing the shift work and working overnight, had over 30% greater incidence of breast cancer. And it was just like a very interesting finding. And it's just like, what's going on there? And it's really related to this. Well, one of the big components is its relationship to insulin and also melatonin, because it's like, it really does a great job at helping to regulate your immune system, which is thus killing cancer cells. So that, and also now we know it's powerful fat burning, potential driver of fat loss as well. And which might sound crazy to some people, like I've never heard anything like that. And so what was discovered, and this was published in the journal Obesity Reviews, they found that melatonin secretion triggers your body's production and mobilization of brown adipose tissue, right? So this is a type of fat that burns fat, right? So when we're trying to get rid of body fat, we're generally talking about white adipose tissue or WAT. So brown adipose tissue or BAT, such a cool name, it's bad fat. So I'm bad fat. Brown adipose tissue is brown because it's so dense in mitochondria. You know, it's like, you know, people, may, I know they've heard this many times on the show, but it's the energy power plants basically in our cells. And it's so dense in energy. Babies have a lot of brown adipose tissue. It's involved in heating us up. So we know that we can produce and mobilize more brown adipose tissue by getting ourselves cold. So this is like a big movement now with everybody doing cryotherapy and cold thermogenesis techniques. But sleep, if you just have a normal sleep cycle and you're in darkness, there's two prerequisites to make melatonin. You need darkness and you need a cyclical pattern to make it adequately. And you're gonna boost your fat loss. To the degree, a study published, and this was conducted by researchers at Chicago University. Now I'm just gonna super synthesize it, but basically they found that when folks were sleep deprived on the same exact diet, they sleep deprived them, then they put them in this, you know, calorie restricted diet to see how does sleep impact fat loss, not weight loss. And so they had test subjects in one phase and they sleep deprived them. So they're getting like 5 hours of sleep, 5.5 hours to be exact. Another phase of the study, they let them get adequate sleep, which if you're sleeping more, you're gonna tend to sleep better. 8.5 hours of sleep. They compiled all the data and they found that the test subjects lost 55% more body fat simply by sleeping more, right? Which is crazy because we think we need to exercise more, we gotta cut more calories. They didn't do any of that. They just got more sleep and they lost more fat.
It's like you start pulling the thread of sleep and you see how fundamentally it's tied into every single aspect of our life. And if there's anything that anybody's taking away from this podcast, it's just that sleep is so much more than sleep and just laying down.
I love that, man. Sleep is so much more than sleep.
So let's talk about EMFs. EMFs is a tricky subject. First of all, there are natural EMFs. There are natural frequencies, electromagnetic frequencies and electromagnetic radiation that come from the earth and the sun itself. So we've been exposed to that since the beginning of time here on earth. Where things are getting challenging now is that through all the amazing communications, through things like cellular technology, which is allowing many of you to listen to this podcast here and allows us to go online, through Wi-Fi, which is again, amazing. But because of all these great technologies, there are some concerns with the level of exposure that we're having to these electromagnetic frequencies and sometimes the radiation that they produce. Now, a lot is not known about EMFs, but one thing that is known is that our brain is most vulnerable to EMFs at night when it goes into the deep detox period and begins to repair its DNA. My next guest, Dr. Carlos Ritter, has spent the last 15 years working to actively mitigate the effects of electromagnetic radiation. In this next clip, Dr. Ritter talks to us about how EMFs affect our sleep and damage sleep pathways in the body and in the brain. He also shares simple steps and tips that we can take to reduce EMF exposure in our home, specifically to support our sleep, but also our overall health. Let's listen in.
What is the purpose of sleep we were talking about? The purpose of sleeping is so you can restore, so you can repair the damage that you have. Each cell has DNA because each cell has to repair the damage that individually has. So, it turns out that EMFs, electromagnetic fields, and this goes to the beginning of my research, start destroying as well restoration pathways. So the activation of these pathways that are extremely big and complex, they start having some not activation problems.
It's like so part of the DNA is damaged, like a wrecking ball. If somebody imagines a building and there's a tiny wrecking ball and that wrecking ball slams into the building, great, okay.
Over and over.
Maybe the building isn't knocked down, but the window is out now.
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
That's right.
And then next time it's like the second floor is out and then the door breaks down and then this happens. So every time that dysfunction happens, the DNA in the cell can't do its job.
Imagine now that, okay, we still have restoration pathways for that window that you just mentioned. But the more that you repair it, the more damage, the more errors you're going to have. That is one thing that we have. We repair DNA, and eventually we're going to have one error. What is cancer? Cancer is nothing else but mutations. And that is one thing that we didn't understand before. We thought, oh yeah, you have this DNA damage, this mutation. This mutation is not because you were born like that.
Right.
Over the time, you have DNA damage. Mm-hmm. You try to repair it. At the end of the day, you accumulate some mutations because those errors. And now you have this mutation that actually is showing this type of cancer.
Right. The previous understanding used to be that, okay, cancer is purely genetic. Somebody had it or didn't have it. And now we know that more than 75%, 80% of cancers are lifestyle related.
Yeah.
And even that, it might go even further more lifestyle as the research continues.
I think that now we have to reclassify all chronic illnesses, putting in the equation EMFs. One thing that we did is we classify illnesses without having this understanding that we're exposed every day to something that it can break your DNA, that it can break your enzymes. So we classify things in one way, then now, in my opinion, we need to reclassify them because we live now in this world with a lot of radiation, man-made radiation that we have.
If the number one focus is to prioritize sleep so that our body gets as least exposure, give us a few things today that we can do to immediately, even if we don't have access or one day we will get access to somebody like you, what can we do today to reduce that exposure?
And I'm going to say it like the way that I told my kids. I have teenagers.
Yes.
And people say that they're the hard-headed in this world. They're not, actually. When you explain things, they have a reason why to do things. So one thing that I told my kids is, you're sleeping. Do you really need to use your cell phone when you're sleeping? Maybe not. So would it kill you to put it in an airplane mode when you're sleeping? It makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
You
and
can
I feel
have
like
your
that's
cell
starting
phone.
To get out there more. There's a lot more people that are starting to understand that maybe I shouldn't keep. I had a friend for years, and he's vegan too, and he's all into his health and everything. He would take his cell phone, he would just put it right under his pillow.
I know.
And he would sleep on that.
Yeah.
He said he doesn't always wake up, so when the alarm is right there, it forces him to wake up, and I'm like, bro, we don't need to do that. So the first thing is, let's put our phone on airplane mode.
Let's put the things that we don't need in airplane mode or unplug them.
Yes.
I asked
my
wife.
In your bedroom. Anything
your
that's not needed to be plugged in, because as you were saying earlier, anything that's plugged in where that plug is meeting the socket, there's an opportunity for dirty electricity to come out.
For electric fields,
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so even anything that's there, we can unplug.
Yeah. Do we need lamps next to our beds? Well, people will think that they do. I've been living without lamps for 9 years now. We really don't need them. Mm-hmm. So whatever I try to do is, try to take away every distraction, electronic distraction that we can have in a sleeping location, out of there and shut it.
Yeah.
A lot of people will say, hey, I cannot live without a cell phone. Or if something happened to my family, they need to reach me. Well, we can leave one cell phone far away of the sleeping locations and have only one instead of having 10 cell phones on the whole entire night.
Because sometimes what happens now, and we'll get to this next one, which is Wi-Fi, there's always a conundrum for people who are in the know, right? It's like, do I put my phone on airplane mode, but I leave Wi-Fi on? Because now most of these phones, they have Wi-Fi calling.
Yeah.
So the cell phone signal is off, but they have Wi-Fi calling. But depending on where your Wi-Fi router is in your house or in your bedroom, you're getting exposure from that too.
Yeah.
So what's better? And we don't know because you have to measure each house.
Well,
but in general, if you have to get some calls because some people are physicians or doctors or other stuff, or they're worried about that whole case scenario. What if my family calls in the middle of the night?
Know.
Should you go on airplane mode and leave your Wi-Fi router on? Or should you keep your cell phone on and keep it far away?
The Wi-Fi router should be as far away as possible from the bed locations.
Got it.
And if we put them far away, the cell phone is more destructive.
Let me ask you another question.
Yeah.
Can you, some, you know, homes have, what's that box? That where you can turn different.
The switch box. Yeah.
The switch box. I've seen some people say that I just go and I just turn off all the electricity.
Can
you do that?
Yeah, you can do that.
To the master switch box
in
your apartment or home. If you wanted to, there's like little things on there that say bedroom or other areas, and you can turn
it off. Usually they're wrong label. Because that's what I measured too.
Sure.
But again,
could you theoretically turn off all the electricity in the home?
Let me say what I do in my house again.
Yes.
My house is shielded. I didn't build that house, so I would take care of those things so you don't have to turn off the electricity if we build a house from scratch. But I didn't build that house. So yeah, whatever I do is every night I leave the AC on and the fridge on. Mm-hmm. The rest of the house, I told my kids, hey, it's already 9, 10. Well, it goes to sometimes midnight. I have teenagers, so everybody understands. And they live with me, So, but it's a say in the house, hey, electricity is off and electricity is off. So we're going to sleep and we turn off all the switches except the AC. I live in Texas, so.
Yes, it gets very hot. You know what we really need? Here's another thing for you to work on, all right? I'm going to give you a list of companies.
We have it. I think that I know where you're going.
An off switch for the house.
We have it already.
One switch that just turns off everything non-essential.
Yeah.
So, okay, so let me ask you a question. You have it already. You can go and install this in people's homes.
That's right.
Got it.
I wanted to tell people a lot of different solutions. This solution that we're talking about right now, it will cost $0.
What, the off switch?
The off switch.
Them doing it or them installing an off switch?
No, them going every night and turn off the switches.
It's just inconvenient, but the real question is, now that you understand that it's 30 electric voltage, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And the average homes that you're looking at is 250, then it's like, okay, if you're interested in this topic, it's worth doing.
So, yeah, it will cost you $0. This is important for us because not everything has to make you spend money.
Yeah.
And I want people to
And not
to
everything
do
has
things.
To be measured, too. Like, sometimes functional medicine doctors say, look, you maybe not don't have the money to go and work with a functional doctor because it's not covered by insurance right now, right? Obviously, you know, Dr. Hyman's working on that and the Cleveland Clinic project that they have out there. But we know now that chances are you have exposure. So if you just go to the solution, which is, let's say, for instance, if you're eating processed foods, we don't need to do all the tests on you to tell you that that's bad for you.
That's right.
We could just say, okay, maybe let's eat a whole food diet.
That's right.
And let's figure out what foods don't necessarily work for you,
but
just going and doing
100% of the time.
Great.
Yeah.
So that's
thing in here. If you go in at night again, my house is like this. We have lanterns. Kelly's house is the same. We have lanterns if you have to go somewhere when you already turn off the electricity.
Yeah.
It's kind of like if we live in the 1700s.
Yeah.
But it does feel different when you turn off the electricity. It's quiet.
Sometimes you don't even hear that little buzz.
That's right.
You don't even know
that it's there until you don't hear it.
One of my friends, Metabolic Mike, his name is Mike. And he has a show called Metabolic Mike, a podcast that's out there. It'd be good for you to do his podcast in the future. He says, he was making this series of Instagram stories saying that he had been camping for the first time in, I think it was a while.
Okay.
And then when he was camping out there and sleeping, he's really big into like mouth taping.
Okay.
Right? Because a lot of people now breathe through their mouth at night, which also causes a mild form of sleep apnea instead of breathing through your nose.
Okay.
And he said, I went camping and I went sleeping outside. I had the best sleep ever. Right. Anybody that knows that slept outside or gone camping, I went to Kenya with a group of friends.
Okay.
And we went to this elephant sanctuary and they set up these tents out there. And there's wild elephants at night that are out there. So you're a little afraid. You're like, are they going to step on me? And they're like, no, they're not going to step on you. But I slept in this tent with no Wi-Fi, no cell phone towers. We're in the remote area in Kenya, in this area called like Namanyak, northern Kenya, about an hour flight from Nairobi. I slept so amazingly well.
Do you see why I did those studies?
Yes.
With no radiation or with radiation? And the thing that you're describing me, I mean, I did the studies, but it's exactly the same thing. When you give a break to your body, when your body try to restore, it will restore.
Sleep is an incredible foundation for our overall health, and it's one that we must lay the groundwork for on a daily basis. We got to give it the love and attention it deserves. Making small changes to our habits can pay off tremendously when it comes to getting better sleep and transforming our overall health. If you know someone that's trying to improve their health and specifically their sleep, do me a favor. Send them this episode. They will appreciate you for it. Until next week, I'll talk to you then. Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the interview. Just a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. This podcast is not, I repeat, it's not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or otherwise qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner. If you're looking for a functional medicine practitioner, you can visit ifm.org and search their Find a Provider database. It's important that you have somebody in your corner that's qualified, that's trained, that's a licensed healthcare practitioner helping you make changes, especially when it comes to your health.